and a one and a two and a three. Hi, Dan.
How's it going? You cued us in like an old-timey conductor.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, we could do like five, six, seven, eight, except, you know, we don't dance. Although, listeners...
You don't know that I'm not dancing over here.
Exactly. They have no way of knowing.
Nobody knows what my feet are doing below this desk.
That sounds worse.
Does that sound like a threat? Maybe it is.
Yeah. Speaking of,
you know, we should do this more often because, before we started the call here, I was just catching up on a little bit of reading here in my Skype panel.
Hmm.
I don't know if you ever opened this application Skype that we're using here, but, have you ever scrolled down and seen multiple weeks long threads of crypto traders, like hundreds of people in a group chat that you've somehow been invited to talking about how, you're going to be, rich and stuff?
No, I have not seen that. Although
I have two threads here that go back a month with hundreds and hundreds of posts, presumably all from fake accounts, but just having weird conversations about the economy and politics and other weird stuff. Like, I don't know what this is, but it's fascinating.
No, see, mine is just the two of us, and then the last time we talked to Micah, in which apparently, oh well. Last time we talked to Micah on Skype, because this is 2022, so we've talked on, he insisted on Zoom last time. Good for him. But yeah, it's just there's this thing called Skype Today that they seem to have added since the last time we spoke, where it's just headlines of news. That. Yeah, and that's what I wanted. That was the only thing that was keeping me from using Skype more often, was a lack of headlines. Yeah, Harvey Weinstein, thanks. I really...
You wanted to see that in your sidebar, didn't you?
Oh, it's not even the sidebar. And also, they seem to have done something with the code base for this trash fire where the window when it launches says Skype and then it gets a space and then open bracket, number one, close bracket. And then when you called, it changed to Skype bracket two bracket. And then when I went back to the other view to tell you what was in the Skype Today thing, it went back to number one. So is there a window that is number two somewhere in here? I don't know. Maybe this whole thing is number two, if you catch my drift.
I agree.
Yeah.
I feel bad, though. I feel it's unfortunate that you're left out of the Forex Traders Club. Oh, I get it now. F-O-R-E-X. Forex. We got the Forex Traders Club 1584 and we got the Gold, Forex, Millionaires Club threads. I mean, I'm sorry you're missing out on becoming wealthy beyond your wildest dreams.
Well, I mean,
but
if I had to pick, I would pick the Millionaires Club. I mean, 1584, that's not a high number.
I don't know what that is. Is that a year? Is that something? I was scrolling. I didn't even make it all the way back to the origin of this thread. I don't know how far back it goes, to be honest, but the last comments were from, 9 o'clock this morning.
It's probably from some incredibly troublesome, like, blood diamond mine founding date or, like, some terrible plantation was started.
I'm not going to read you the whole thread here, but I'll read you the most recent comment, 9:03 this morning from Natalia. It says, "So we are all part of sin, whether you like it or not."
Thanks, Natalia.
And before that, it was something about market volatility, but whatever. Speaking of volatility.
And I would say more relevantly, money, dirty money.
Isn't all money dirty?
I mean, I wouldn't lick it.
Did you ever go to the bank and get like, you know, a couple of fresh sequential dollar bills or something?
Oh, yeah. And I don't like that experience, actually. I know a lot of people are like, oh, well, there's a fresh, crisp dollar bill, but they all stick together. It's terrible.
You just got to rub them in some animal feces or something or whatever, right? Isn't that what they do to prep them for the world?
Yeah, well, that's why I get all my singles broken in, you know?
But you feed them to the monkey or whatever that poops them back out and then you can brew them?
No, I mean, it's just, you know, whenever you, because really the only time I need change these days is the hairdresser prefers to be tipped in cash or Venmo. And I refuse to sign up for Venmo. So I tip in cash and they're not using the Cash App. They don't use the other apps or whatever the thing is anymore. But they only use Venmo or cash. So I have
to... Is that so they don't have to split tips?
No, I think it's because they can... let's say report their taxes very accurately. But but that's the only time I get changes, because I'm just like, okay, well, I have a $20 bill because that's what the ATM dispenses. Please break this down. And then you get the assortment, the Whitman sampler of various conditions.
Maple dollar bill?
Yeah, I'm sure maple was probably involved at some point in the digestive tract. But thing under the sun. I don't want to look at it. But the money, there's a lot of cash money in this movie, and it looks not super fecal, so that's probably good.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's really only the one thing at the end where it's all like wrapped up in the cellophane or whatever, right? That's how you know they're bad guys, when they wrap up their large quantities of money in plastic wrap.
Yeah, well, or in briefcases.
I guess he had a lot of dirty, sweaty, disgusting money that he took from Post Malone.
Yeah, I mean, is there any other way to get money from Post Malone? Do you get clean money from Post Malone?
You know, he seems to have slightly cleaned up his act a little bit. But yeah, I wouldn't say, I don't know the man personally, but I wouldn't say that... hygiene appears to be at the top of his priority list.
No, especially, well, I mean, in this movie, obviously, they wanted him to be a little...
grungy?
Grungy. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Grimy? CD? I mean, the venue in which they find themselves having bare-knuckle cash fights surrounded by people shouting at them does not seem to be the most reputable of, you know, sporting events.
No, see, my notes start here with so then Fight Club happens.
But yeah. With money. That, yeah. It's not some sort of like existential getting in touch with yourself kind of thing.
No.
I need some money to eat food because I live in my car and people like to stab me from time to time because they're mad at me.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I've taken their money by intimidating the other person into not fighting me.
You can't blame old Posty there for being a little weirded out that a disgraced UFC fighter who killed someone in the ring just happens to wander in and start, you know, taking his shoes off to getting ready to fight you for money. I'd probably do the same thing.
Yeah, especially when you recognize who it is. Probably bad.
They say no rules fighting or whatever, but there should maybe be like a, you know, like an Olympic style rule where like if you've done things professionally, you can't compete on the Olympic level there. So
yeah. No, but they're fighting in an Outback Steakhouse. No rules, just right. So they had to keep going.
You know, one of these days, I'm going to run out of like takeout options and I'm just going to order like to go food from Outback just to see what it's like.
Oh, it's very bad.
It's been a very long time since I've been Outback, but I want to see what it's like now.
Oh yeah.
Cause it's still in business. How is it still in business?
Cause people don't understand value, for money.
But, you know, stuff's expensive these days. I don't know if you've noticed this.
Yeah. Joe Biden's America.
I don't want to get off on a rant here, but, whatever happened to, inflation.
Yeah, my dad and stepmother were complaining about the cost of mayonnaise. So anyway, very funny. But
it's because Mr. Brandt has a chokehold on Florida or something, right?
Well, right, and them and the Darden restaurant group. Those are the owners of the Outback Steakhouse, by the way. But
who? Which restaurant group?
Darden.
Darden.
It's like garden, but you spell it with a D in the front instead of a G.
Dare I ask why you know that one? I understand why you would know the owners of other restaurant groups, but why that one?
Because my dad and stepmother wanted a gift certificate to, I think it's Bahama Breeze, which used to be in the Darden restaurant group.
Do they have a Bahama Breeze there still?
Dan, it's from Florida. They're all still there.
Oh, man. We used to have a Bahama Breeze here for a couple of years, and then it went out of business. Mm-hmm. And turned into one of the, like... the most horrible, disgusting bars you've ever seen. You know those bars that are like half indoors, half outdoors, and they put beach sand out there so you feel like you're at the beach?
Yeah.
One of those. It was one of those. But it was all full of like 50-year-old people that still do cocaine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've not done that survey at the one in Rocky Point in Tampa. But basically, near where you went to the mall, International Plaza by the airport, there's the causeway. And There's a small body of water that you would not want to swim in ever under any circumstances, but it has a like fake beach there. And the Bahama breeze is on that, so that they could seem beachy.
They had a really colorful, you know, slushy drinks full of alcohol, if I remember.
Yeah. I mean, everywhere in Florida has that. And it, there, the problem with that is they're all sweet. It's not like the cool, trendy hip rosés. These are like sugar bombs. They're terrible.
They were you know, Olive Garden daiquiris or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, well,
does Olive Garden serve daiquiris? I don't know what they serve. They just serve sangria.
I'm absolutely sure there's probably some circumstance where they have like Italian daiquiri or something on the menu, and you're just like, sure, whatever, guys.
Just like they make back in Rome.
Yeah, I mean, it's just. Whatever.
What you're saying is that this movie really took you home, really reminded you of growing up in Florida.
No, not really. Because I'm not from the Keys specifically. This is a very
Florida's Florida.
It's a different vibe. Also, this is the Dominican Republic for the Keys.
Is that where they shot it? I didn't even bother looking.
Yeah, because I was like, some things about this seem like a little different. And it was just because it's still very close geographically.
It's not like have a famous tree growing in the middle of an old bridge.
That maybe I don't know. I couldn't tell you if any of that was like footage that they had shot separately, but like apparently all of the footage of them like at the bar and doing all that other stuff is supposed to be DR.
They really never circled back to that tree and like actually closed that loop with the storyline.
No, I gotta tell you, the most frustrating part of this movie is Charlie, because I don't understand why Charlie is in the movie. Like you said, with the tree,
Charlie's the kid. I was like,
Charlie's the kid who talks about Fred.
It's all very peculiar. The I guess the bookstore is there specifically just to be the thing that pulls him back from walking out on the town, because he met a cool kid who gave him a free book or whatever, and they crossed the line by burning down the bookstore.
Yeah, I mean, because I think I'm just gonna guess here. I think that they were trying to have someone who was like very innocent in this process, because Jessica Williams' character is not strictly speaking innocent, but you don't want anything bad to happen to her, but like, she's a businesswoman or whatever. When bad stuff happens to Charlie and her father, then you feel bad because they were like innocent bystanders who were affected by this process. And so that seems to be why they're there. But story-wise, they don't do anything else the story.
I think they're also probably supposed to be the modern analog of, I don't know if you remember the original one, but remember he goes to the car parts store to keep buying like tires and windshield and stuff, and eventually he becomes friends with the guy who owns the shop, and then the bad guys like burn down the auto parts store or whatever.
Oh yeah, I mean,
think it's probably that too.
I need to be perfectly honest with you.
You completely forgot about the original Roadhouse.
I the only thing I could remember, and I'm not even sure if this is true, mind you, because I didn't check, is there's a taxidermied polar bear in the final fight. I think,
yeah, he pushes it over and the guy like freaks out and falls down. And then he's like trapped under the polar bear for a minute. And then I think Dalton kicks him in the head or knocks him out or something.
That's the extent of my memory.
you don't even remember Sam Wachihusett in there with his hair and kicking people and walking with his weird limp and being, you know, stabbed dead. And he finds him on the bar.
No, when Merlin posted it the other day, the photo of a young Sam, what's his face?
What is his last? Why do I always want to call him Sam Neill. That's not even
Sam Elliott.
Sam Elliott. There you go.
Right. Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. You're correct.
Okay.
You're correct, Miho.
Yeah. So
honestly, that's probably that's a fantastic takeaway from that movie, Merlin. Uh-huh. Just start calling everybody Miho. It's a great affectation.
Yeah. Oh boy. But that was like the first time I remember that even happened. Cuz like we discussed at the time, Roadhouse didn't fit into my life in any way until you suggested we watch it. And yeah. You were very emphatic about it because you like Roadhouse a lot.
I don't know that I like Roadhouse a lot. I appreciate its absurdity. And I still have not come to terms with the VHS that I found of Roadhouse in my childhood home. I don't know if I told that story on the other episode, but at one point, many years later, I was like cleaning out VHS tapes and there was like a TV recorded copy that said Roadhouse. And I was like, why the hell would my parents watch Roadhouse? That doesn't make any, like, it threw my world upside down that there was a copy of Roadhouse in my house.
A Roadhouse in your house?
A Roadhouse in your house.
Mm-hmm.
The whole bit in this movie about why is it called The Roadhouse?
Yeah.
I did not land with me. I didn't get any of it.
No.
I didn't get it.
It felt like the kind of thing that's like responding to the IMDb goofs and trivia section from the first movie. And I don't need that dialogue in this film because I know we're hanging a lantern on the fact that Roadhouse is one word and it's not like anyway, it just doesn't mean anything. If you are unfamiliar with the concept of a roadhouse, you don't know anything about the Chicago style guide preferences for how you spell or, you know, do anything with Roadhouse. So it just kind of wasn't that funny. But I did appreciate some of the other humor that's in here. And I'm not sure how much of it is written by the various people contributing to the script, because this had an interesting production process.
The way it was stolen and written by AI or whatever. I stopped reading all that.
I mean, we could get into the weird stuff that happened with the release of this film. The original writer of Roadhouse was going to get the rights back to Roadhouse, like a lot of other movies have. I don't know if you remember in the news and stuff, like recently. Rights have reverted because no active claim or whatever was being issued on the thing. I don't remember all the stuff, but the guy was doing that. And then Amazon, so that they could beat the deadline, which I think was the end of last year, they needed to re-record some ADR so that they could release this for Sundance. And apparently they used AI, according to sources, to do the dubbing of some lines. And I don't know if that's true. I don't know if it's like we're talking like Descript or something where it's like,
yeah, we do that too. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. You replace like a word here and a word there. It's honestly easier than doing a whole ADR session.
Yeah. So I don't know. But he tried to get the film blocked so that he could get money, basically. And
because of the AI ADR?
No, because they were trying to do to beat up the clock. Yeah. And so he was trying to like stir up some stuff about how they're like going around the strike, but whatever, nothing seems to have impeded it. I think the case might still be ongoing, but like it would be damages or something if it comes to anything at this point. It's not like they obviously were all watching the movie, or well, some two of us watched the movie. But the,
didn't you see the headlines? It was like the most watched Amazon Prime premiere ever or something. I don't know.
Sure. I mean, those things always matter a significant degree. But I mean, it was like the opening film of Sundance or whatever and got, you know, ovations.
Yeah, I just saw that.
Whatever.
Like, this movie at Sundance is fascinating.
Yeah. Well, but then there's also, and I attribute that mainly to Joel Silver, who there was some controversy with him recently, where he was kicked out of a set or something. I don't know. Joel Silver's a weirdo.
This movie, the original Roadhouse is like what's the word I'm looking for? It's not a good movie. It's like it's something you don't tell people that you enjoy watching. And the idea that this is like, now in Sundance as a remake, it's a very odd feeling.
Well, I mean, I think people would charitably describe it as a cult classic. It's cheesy. And what's interesting to me about this is Doug Liman and what he did with that, because he's known for sort of different films than this. I don't think of him mainly for like comedy chops, but like he
sorry, okay, are you framing this movie in particular as a comedy?
Well, there's funny stuff in it, but there's also action stuff in it, so I guess that's the Doug Liman-y parts. But Doug Liman, boycotted the premiere of his movie at Sundance because he wanted it to have a theatrical release, and thought for, or claimed that it was supposed to have a theatrical release, but Amazon didn't do it. And Jake Gyllenhaal was asked about this, and Jake's like, I'm going to go to the premiere. Doug, I think, is confused, basically. And he thought it was always supposed to be like this. And then Doug Liman apparently just went to the premiere anyways. So it was an incredibly weird move on Doug Liman's part to try to, like, torpedo his own premiere in a gamble to try to get a theatrical premiere out of it, because people would be so outraged about it going direct to video. But, like, this is, like, the most direct to video movie I could think of, probably. Like, it is a cheeseball remake of an 80s film about punching people to protect a bar.
Yeah, I guilty pleasure is how I would describe it. Not okay. Cult classic personally, but okay. Like, I don't know. I feel it sounds like he's just doing that thing that everybody seems to do now, where they're like, ah, the studio screwed me out of the thing and didn't, like, this is 2024. Like, it's been 4 years since we've been having those conversations. But yeah, this is extremely a straight to streaming movie. And I don't know. Yeah, I'm glad it was on streaming, because I wouldn't have watched it otherwise. Like, I barely watch anything at all. I was like, yeah, that's fine.
There is zero chance I would have seen this in a movie theater.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it eventually would have found its way to home video, to Amazon Prime later, I guess, through some sort of windowing. But, like, I don't know. It was a weird thing for Doug Liman to do. I'm not sure if that has injured his reputation with some people, because they probably don't want their own movies to be torpedoed, because streaming's going to happen for a lot of stuff now these days.
His recent directing credits are very confusing to me.
He's a weird guy, it seems.
Why did I not remember he did Jumper?
Uh-huh.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. These don't make any sense at all.
No.
To these credits here.
Nope. Yeah.
See, but he was involved in the remake of the TV series Knight Rider. Wasn't a director, but he produced it. So, like, he's got some, you know, feelings about remakes of silly old cult classics, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, what did you think of the directing in this particular movie? It's certainly not directed the way the original was, which was they just kind of propped up a camera in the corner of a bar and let people do their thing.
Yeah,
that's unkind. I mean, you know, there was probably some more craft to it than that, but it was the 80s or whatever.
Like, I don't know how to say this in a way that doesn't sound like a really backhanded compliment, but they put in more effort than they needed to.
that's a fair way to put it, because there's a lot of movement and action scene. There's a lot of kinetic energy in this movie, mm-hmm. I guess would be a way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm specifically thinking of just, like, the choreography of the camera movements and the physical choreography of all of the fighting, obviously. But, like, there is a lot of stuff that they do with cameras that is not just setting up a camera in the corner of a bar, but also not just your typical way of shooting an action scene where you'd get your, you know, your wides, and then you'd cut to a bunch of rapid fire, like, close ups, and then back to some wides or whatever. Like, with this, there are extended sequences where we get the point of view of one of the fighters, like, as if this was a first person boxing video game almost. And then the camera.
Are you talking particularly about the UFC in the ring stuff?
Well, that, but also in the bar a couple of times that happens, and in the beginning of the movie, the first fight with Post Malone before Jake even comes in. It doesn't last for very long. Like, we're not, the whole movie isn't like Halo or something, but, like, we get, like, a few moments where you're getting it direct. The camera is the vantage point of the other fighter, and you have arms on the sides punching, and then a punch will hit basically the camera out of that perspective of shifting it. So you're not actually even cutting away. The camera just kind of, like, slides out of their brain almost, and you're seeing the fight continue. It is a very unusual way of going about it. It's almost like, you know, Fight Club crossed with, like, Crank or something. Like, and I think I never really agree with Owen Gleiberman, the movie reviewer, about almost anything. See, especially his comments about Renee Zellweger's appearance. But he did say something I thought was kind of insightful, where he said, if the first Roadhouse was a better Chuck Norris movie, the new one is something more uncanny. It's like Jason Statham movie directed by Jonathan Demme. And that is not probably super far off, because it's like the stakes in this are low and cheesy and dumb. A lot of the dialogue is bad. And we have a lot of like incredible attention to detail paid to fighting and action and like the cinematography and the lighting and everything. It looks really slick for what it is. Yeah. And I'm sure some of that is the use of the red Komodo and red V-Raptor.
Yeah, you can really feel the raw wavelet encoding.
And I don't know anything about the lights M0.8 lenses, but apparently that's what they use for these. And I will say,
the what?
Lights, like the company Leica, LEITZ.
Look at that.
Yeah, I don't know of them being used often, I guess, or any other circumstances where they were used. But there is a heavy vignetting with these lenses, where in some of the fights in daylight, where the camera's spinning around, you do see the vignetting of like the sky exposure changing as the camera's swiveling around through the space. And so that kind of got distracting for me a little bit, but everything's like, you know, it's not like it's anamorphic or crispy or it's too dreamy, like a Cook lens or something like that. Like everything just kind of feels like just sharp enough and just like, you know, slick enough. Everything is just the right amount of detail for what you're going for. They always say like the vignetting is the only thing that like struck me as a little weird.
What an odd choice in lensing. You're going to go with an f0.8 full frame lens. It's amazing anything in this movie was in focus.
Well, they stopped down, which makes me question, why did you use the lens?
Well, you got to do that because the sharpest f-stop is two stops down from full wide open. So if you want to shoot with a perfectly crystal clear, what would that be, 1.2 or something? Then you got to get. And I'm talking out of my ass. These are things people say about lenses, but that's
yeah.
I don't know. They're nice, small, compact looking lenses, and Leica's been making pretty good lenses for a while now. I mean, I know Mr. Fincher used to strap on the previous generation Leicas onto his red cameras for movies a couple movies ago.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't like fault it for anything. I just thought it was a weird kind of choice. In a lot of cases, it's stopped down. Like we're talking like, I don't know, like F11 or something in some of these shots where you're seeing into the, you know, background and stuff. I don't know. What is that in T-stops? I forget the conversion between F-stops and T-stops.
F-stops is just theoretical. T-stops is just measured on the lens. So it would just be, it's the same thing, except slightly different spot on the ring, theoretically, if the glass is not actually lab perfect kind of thing.
That's fun.
Now I got to look at pictures. I almost want to rewatch this movie now because it's been a couple of weeks since I watched it. And like, yeah, there's some narrow focus here, but it's the Komodo's not, but the V-Raptor is a full frame sensor. So it would be narrow as hell already.
Yeah.
Shooting 8K Vista Vision in the wide sun here with a 0.8 lens. Like what the hell kind of NDs they have to strap on this goofy thing. Anyway,
A lot of strapping in your commentary today.
Oh, have I said strapping a few times?
Yes.
Huh.
You said David Fincher likes to strap on these lenses, and then you said like that's the ND, you got to strap on.
How you put a lens on a camera?
You strap it on.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You can tell how into the movie we were with all of the conversation around the movie. What'd you think of the wardrobe choices, where he's basically wearing like black Dockers and like an assortment of Acapulco shirts as a they would refer to them in Fear and Loathing.
I thought wardrobe was fine. It worked for everyone. I didn't have any particular thoughts about it. I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal is shirtless a lot in this.
I mean, you put in that much work, you might as well be, right?
I know. And it made me feel real bad because I looked up his age and he's 43. So it's just like, well, why don't I just like jump off a bridge?
I mean, when you're going to dedicate every waking moment of your life to training and, you know, not eating food, then that's going to happen.
Yeah, I know. But it looked good for
this kind of guy that goes pizzeria mozza and orders a salad. Embarrassing.
So sad. Yeah. See, I feel so much more fulfilled because I had a pizza at pizzeria mozza.
Yeah, exactly. Pizza's mm-hmm. good.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, but casting wise, we kind of briefly touched on this. I think, what do you think of Jake Gyllenhaal for the role?
I like Jake Gyllenhaal in general.
Yes.
I think he's doing a lot of smirking to himself, which is a bit whatever. He works in this role. This is not the Dalton from the other movie. Like he's not playing Patrick Swayze's character. Not even close, really. Maybe a little bit of the same sort of Zen vibe, because like, you know, world weary, lost kind of thing. He doesn't have the same sort of like, you know, Tai Chi vibe where he's like one with nature and accidentally kills because he's a instrument of death or something. He's a disgraced UFC fighter who has now found a little bit of calm within himself because he's essentially homeless and jobless. So I don't know. I like Jake Gyllenhaal in general, but it's you know, everything's twisted from the original version, so it's parallel universe Roadhouse shot in 2024 with very crazy choreography, as you pointed out.
Yeah, I mean, it, even though I don't remember the events of the first film, I know that this movie is not the events of the first film, and so it didn't bother me, because I think if they tried to make a close remake of exactly what the original was, then I think some of the choices they made with casting would be a lot weirder than they are.
They threw in the bare minimum number of nod to the original movie that I think it satisfies the people who remember those things. But you know, I really missed somebody saying pain don't hurt. He got a few of the other lines in there. You know, he didn't say be nice. I think Conor McGregor said be nice in one of his ADR lines when they're in that final battle, though.
Mm. But I don't know. I think he's fine in this, and like you said, he smiles a lot. But Jake Gyllenhaal, he's a smiley, smirky guy,
except a Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
But you got a lot of comic relief in here from Arturo Castro.
Oh, he's so good.
He's very so good. You could tell that they're like, we got a lot of this guy, and he's pretty good. Should we just keep putting it all in? They're like, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what's good about him is he punctures the kind of seriousness of some of these moments and kind of reveals how incredibly stupid all these people are, so it makes it invaluable to have him there, and I think he's perfectly cast for it. He's very funny, and because he's not doing it for laughs inside of the character is not funny, just what the character does becomes funny to us, the audience. Like he's not entertaining anybody. He's, you know, he's not like a funny guy in the movie, in the world of the movie.
He's just overly honest a little bit.
Yeah. And that's charming. Like when the first scene where Dalton comes up and asks, are those your bikes out there? And then he says, yeah, mine's the red one on the end.
Yeah. It's great.
And then they all realize that, their bikes are going to, stuff's going to happen to their bikes if they don't go outside. That just made it. It leavened the moment. And I also really liked Jessica Williams of Daily Show fame, and among other things. She's a good bar owner. I like the decision that they made to not have there be romantic tension between them.
Yeah. Although the way they kind of sort of like not villainized her, but like, you know, separated her from Jake in the way that she was like holding back from telling him the truth. I don't know that really landed. I mean, it seemed like there wasn't a whole lot of connection between them. She like begged him to come down and hired him, and he's like, all right. And then eventually, and then they just kind of like coexist in rooms for the rest of the movie until the end, kind of.
It didn't make a lot of sense, because I also don't understand. So her bar is so threatened by these roving bikers that she needs a better bouncer who is basically a fighter, an underground bare knuckle boxing fighter, who is potentially lethal, and wants to recruit him. So she has enough time to go up there, seek him out, find him, and go back. And who's watching the bar during that? I don't know. But anyway, she is the one who makes the who pleads with him to go do it, and he does. And then he gets down there, and she doesn't tell him everything. And it kind of makes her seem, like you said, self-centered or like not entirely good or something. But like, there's nothing technically wrong, except there's no reason why she wouldn't tell him. Like, yeah. I don't understand. It's not like she's under.
You're going to scare him away. It's like, well, you're asking him to come down here and fight a bunch of weird, like rowdy guys. Like, I don't know if he's down there, you're probably not going to scare him away. You'd probably just tell him what the deal is.
Right. Especially after what's his name? Dell. I kept getting Dell and Dex confused, but there are a lot of similar names in here. And Frankie Charlie, like, I don't understand why we did that. So anyway, when Dell dies, then and it was a very funny death. when Dell dies, you know, Chekhov's crocodile.
Do you think there was another crocodile down there that made a dude you're getting a Dell joke?
Oh, that'd be fun.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah,
when
but
he dies, what?
When he dies and they have their little conversation where he's like in her office and the blinds are light or whatever it is. And then she's startled and it's like that's a moment where they could be honest, but for some reason they're not. And I don't understand. Because he also has information that he's not telling her because he wants her to tell him the truth. But at the point that she doesn't tell him the truth, why doesn't he just tell her what he knows to make her do it? I don't understand his motivation in holding back, because he also enlists Charlie to like look at the Google Maps satellite view of the bar.
Yeah, that whole thing was very interesting too, because they're like, what could this possibly be? It's too far away for this, or it's the back route for that. It's like they're coming onto the shore. It's like, no, I believe the answer that we eventually got was that Mr. Brandt is just a control freak and he doesn't want anything in the way of his golf course or whatever. Like, there was no like convincing reason why that the roadhouse absolutely had to be eradicated from that position. He had so much extra land around the little model of his hotel, mm-hmm. where he could do whatever he wanted. The people from the top of the hotel probably wouldn't even be able to see the roadhouse very well, but he's like, no, this has to be gone.
Yeah, it was very he has his little like Goldfinger model Delta City model of like what his perfect resort is going to be, and he has a little model of where the roadhouse is. And for some reason, the two don't intersect or collide in any way, shape, or form.
they're like a mile away.
Yeah. So it's just like, I don't understand what you would need it for. They didn't
even come up with some sort of like fake nonsense about like how we can't get insured if there's another business on the property or something.
Like something. I don't know. It was very weird. He could have at least had like a thing where he had to like move it out of the way so that he could put his thing there or something. Instead, they just have them both set up side by side. And it's like, well,
or he didn't even do like a class thing where he's like, you people are trashy and you're going to like get in the way of my fancy friends hanging out and having a good time, which is basically like the first roadhouse. That guy was just like, I want to destroy the roadhouse because I can and screw you.
Yeah. And I do like Billy Magnuson as Ben Brandt, because he's this perfect mix of like 80s preppy villain with like 2020 Nepo baby kind of situation. Yeah. And so he's very good in this. And I was trying to, it was really bothering me, and I had to pause the movie at one point because I was just like, what do I know him from? And he was in Ingrid Goes West and he's been in some other stuff. And I was just like, oh, that guy. But he's very good.
I need to watch that movie. I've never seen it. Yeah. Do you like it?
I like it a lot, but the third act is a trash fire, but the movie is fun to watch. And so I recommend seeing it. I think it's on Amazon Prime. We didn't even talk about that part. This is the first movie I've watched since Amazon has switched the commercials on. Yeah.
How are your commercials?
I had one commercial at the start of this for A24's Civil War by Alex Garland. And well, it didn't make me want to go see Civil War any more than I currently didn't want to, but
a lot of people, just as an aside, a lot of people have been saying like, oh, it's not what you think and it's not taking a particular stance or whatever, and it's a well-made movie. I have no interest in seeing a movie called Civil War about a civil war, just none whatsoever. It's not appealing. It's exhausting. It sounds like it's exhausting.
And to add on to it, it is exhausting, but the fact that it doesn't have a stance is just like, why am I going to watch it?
Well, it just exposes the horrors of what it would be like if Americans were fighting other Americans, no matter which side they were on. Which I don't want to.
No, I have that.
You know, it's funny. You see those goofy red plastic sunglasses that what's his name is wearing in the trailer?
Yeah.
My child has some of those from Valentine's Day. They're shaped like hearts, but they're the same like big red plastic thing. So as soon as I saw that, I was like, "Oh, you got a little Valentine's Day basket too, didn't you?"
Yeah. Well, anyway, they paid for limited commercial interruption or whatever, so I only saw that one ad.
Okay, that makes sense because I think I saw the same deal.
It was weird because at the top it said one of two for the ad count, and then I was just like, when's the second one gonna happen?
The movie is the second ad.
Yeah,
and it's an ad for Amazon.
Yeah. But anyway, there was neither here nor there, but I did like Billy Magnussen. He is good in Ingrid Goes West is fun to watch, and I recommend it. I think you'd
I remembered him from Game Night.
Oh, I haven't seen Game Night. Everybody says that's good.
It is good. Yeah. But you know, he's got, I don't know, he reads as more comedy than Nepo Baby D-Bag to me, but I was it was a little hard to, like, you had to buy into his nonsense, which I think, you know, he did very well, but
yeah,
I still wanted to see him as like the, you know, attractive dumb guy from Game Night or whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I was saying, we're like 80s preppy villain, where he's like, he's smarmy. Yeah. Like, he's a smarmy guy who's full of himself. And he's shown to have poor taste and to also be quick to anger and blame other people around him when, you know, it's not strictly speaking their fault. Like the first scene we see him in where he's insisting on getting
a straight razor shave on the bow of a boat as it bounces through the waves in his little banana hammock and open t-shirt.
Yeah, and he's furious nonstop with the guy who's doing it, and then eventually with the captain where he just decks him at the end of the scene. Like I laughed a little because it was just like so absurdly over the top.
They came out of the gate hard on his character there.
Yeah, and when he goes to the bar later and he orders a vodka neat, and I was just like, what?
Did he specify a brand or did he just say vodka? I forget.
I think he just said vodka. And when they cut to him later in the same evening, when he's like dour and like, you know, retreated to his boat and he's all unhappy, and he's just drinking Maker's Mark. And it was just like, what?
He's a bad Nepo baby, even though he lives on a yacht.
Yeah. It's no taste.
He spent all his money on pink suits.
I know. You look like a pimp on Easter. It was what I think Jessica Williams' character says. It was very funny. I wish that we had more scenes of that where it was just like the conflict between them over what it is. Like there was nothing. Like I wanted to understand what made it personal. I wanted to understand like how long this has been going on. Like how long Jessica Williams
knew
about
it. About her uncle that owned the bar or whatever, and he was good to the people and stuff.
Yeah, like, and that meant nothing. That connected to nothing. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff in this movie where things get brought up, and then they don't revisit it.
Even the other bouncers that he sort of takes under his wing. There's two in this movie, and they have, you know, some funny bits and stuff. But in the original, it was much. There was like five or six of them. They were all characters, and they were like part of this little team, and they had much bigger roles than just like tossing couple of one-liners back and forth at each other while they punch people. Like it was, I don't know, they seemed underutilized, but it, you know, I get like, far be it for me to criticize these characters for not being fleshed out, because thank God this movie is only an hour and a half. Like this movie does not deserve to be any longer than it is, and I appreciate that they realized that and did not make it longer.
Did I watch
Oh my God, it's 2 hours and 1 minute. What did I watch?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Because I it was 2 hours. I wrote in my Letterboxd review right before this, this movie should have been an hour and a half.
maybe that was just me like mentally projecting. I had to watch it over two nights because whatever. Yeah. It's just what things are now. But I thought this movie was like an hour 30 hard cut off.
No,
and I was like,
no.
Yeah, that sounds right. This is not a 2 hour and 1 minute movie.
No. And I have to say, there is that part where it was, I think it was 30 or 40 minutes from the end of the film where I'm just like, let me pause and see how much time is left. Cause I literally can't believe the movie's still going.
You know, I think I did have that experience. Now that you bring it up, I think I did like pop up the little bar at the bottom and I was just like, there's no way there's 40% of this movie left.
Yeah. Cause like they just have so much stuff where it's like, That we're not even to the part where there's the payment that he gets and then Cold Cox, the sheriff deputy, and then like she's abducted and then he has to get her back and then there's more fight. It's just like all that stuff still happens after that. Him getting like everything. It's just like, how long is this? So no, I don't agree that this movie felt like tight and bright.
Maybe it's because I watched it in two sittings. Yeah. I felt like two short movies.
Yeah. I watched it this afternoon. I was just like, well, that was my whole afternoon. but I should phrase that. It doesn't always feel slow. It's just one of the situations where you're like, does the movie end? And the answer is yes, eventually. But
I think part of it is just the, where are we going with this? And the answer is,
Yeah, because it meanders a fair deal. Because we bring in a ton of other characters that really don't, they don't contribute like character wise. They just contribute in terms of like plot complication. And it's like, I don't know if we need plot complication in Roadhouse remakes.
Not especially like when you get to the rich guys doing annoying rich guy things. Well, actually, I think the plot complication in the rich guy thing was that the rich guy's son had a thing for the girl that Patrick Swayze was with. I think that was all of the complication they needed to spin that movie into the third act, but they didn't do that in this one.
No, instead we get the doctor from the ER who was upset with him initially. They fall in love basically and they have dates and stuff. And then they find out that she's the daughter of the corrupt sheriff who works for the bad guy. Or technically the bad guy's father. But also technically this bad guy. But there is also a hitman who is a fighter that is hired by the father
from jail
to sort of oversee what the son is doing and to do to not really be under him, but also kind of complicate things further by making sure that his father's wishes are accomplished. And I don't know why the father is invested in this resort at all because he was running drugs.
He just wants to make sure his money isn't squandered. But, you know, also spoiler alert, the assassin that comes in to straighten out the kid ends up killing the kid.
Yeah.
So there's that. What'd you think of Conor McGregor's butt?
I mean,
two views of it.
I gotta say, I don't like Conor McGregor. And we were complaining. We were commenting on the amount of smirking that Jake Gyllenhaal does. Conor McGregor seems to have gotten some impression of Jake Gyllenhaal's smirk initially and then said, I'm going to do that the whole time. And so he's smiling through the whole film.
Doing that goofy walk that he does.
Yeah.
But this is literally his first movie. So we can cut him a little bit of slack because of that. He's just an obnoxious showman from the UFC.
Also, it's worth stipulating. He is an actual fighter and I do not want him to kill me. But
he's much bigger in this movie than he was when he used to fight professionally, which is another reason he's very scary.
Yeah. I mean, I did think it was funny when we're first introduced to him that he was escaping from a rendezvous he was having with somebody's wife or mistress or whatever, so he like I guess got out of the window or whatever and he's in Italy and then he gets a call and I'm like, uh-oh, it's not up his butt, right? Like, where does he have the phone?
he may be having some fun time with a lady friend, but he's got shoes and socks on.
Yes,
where
exactly.
He keeps his cell phone at all times.
Like a totally normal person does.
Totally normal. Well, yeah. Everything about him in this movie is extremely normal.
Yes, especially the giant back tattoo. But
you know, I saw a funny clip. I don't remember where it was, where they show putting all the tattoos on him. He has that many tattoos, but they covered them all up and put different ones on him. I was like, you should just let him have the regular ones that he has.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they were just like, we need to go more extreme with it.
No, it's not more extreme. It's the same. They just like modified it.
Yeah. Okay. But
yeah, he's got a lot of ADR in this movie, which, you know. Expected,
but it's bad. It's very noticeable, and it doesn't make his speech all that much clearer, I would say. He's very difficult to understand in a lot of scenes, and his intonation for when he's saying certain things, it's like he puts a little spin on it sometimes, and you're just like, is that the way you were gonna, like, is this your first time speaking any English? Like what, why would you do that?
He's very, very Irish.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but that's the thing. It's just like, it's weird because I've never heard an Irishman talk like how he's talking. He seems to be doing something else, or maybe he can't move his jaw very much from all of the fights he's been in. I have no idea, but he just seems to be like through his teeth trying to say things. And sometimes he says them like short and fast and quiet, and sometimes he says them loud and slow but weird, and I don't understand what was happening.
That's
because
he has
that.
To be smiling no matter what.
I don't know. I didn't care for him. I didn't care for the resolution with him. I didn't need to see the hospital scene at the end of the movie.
You stated the post credit scene.
Yeah. He didn't do anything for me, like, in terms of this story. It's just like they needed to have the Joker to Jake Gyllenhaal's Batman. And
I mean, he's menacing. That's pretty much what he's there to do.
Yeah, I just didn't care. And I didn't understand, especially when he gets brought in and he has his first fight inside the bar, where they Billy Magnuson's character has spooked, Ben Brandt has spooked Jake Gyllenhaal's Dalton by showing him the pirated YouTube video of Dalton killing his friend in the UFC ring because he took things too far. And so then Dalton doesn't initially get involved in the fighting in the bar. And then eventually someone just shouts bar fight and punches the person sitting next to them in the bar, which I don't think is strictly speaking how that happens, but
I think that's one of the various Roadhouse One tributes.
Yeah. And then the guys he's been training are no match for Conor McGregor, and it's just like, well, yeah, I mean, I don't know, but they have to like beat them up, and it's just like, but then they're kind of sidelined from the rest of the film. So why did we teach them anything? Because they don't do anything.
You got your underlings, and you got your Bowsers, and Conor McGregor is the Bowser.
Yeah, I don't know. I just thought that they were going to do something like character wise, where like I guess Lucas Cage plays Billy, and then I don't remember what the other guy's name was, but it was funny to see Lucas Cage in here because it was just like, oh. Okay.
Yeah, why do I recognize him?
He was in White Lotus season one. Did you watch that?
I did. I'm trying to remember.
Do you remember the Australian mustache guy?
Yes.
Do you remember his assistant Dylan?
Yes.
That was Lucas Cage.
Wait, that's season two, right?
No, it's season one.
You're right, season one. What? Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, sure. So that's the only reason I recognize him?
Probably. I mean, unless you get a lot of like People magazine or something, because he was married to Kim Kardashian's hairstylist for 8 months last year.
No. But he was in Fargo. Wait, right? Yeah. I'm looking at the right thing here.
I didn't watch Fargo, but probably. Yeah. But anyway, I was just surprised that they chose to just kind of like torpedo everything that was happening in terms of like character development and plot momentum by having our sort of, you know, quote unquote Joker guy show up.
I mean, you know, nobody pushed over a stuffed polar bear on top of Lucas Cage, but yeah, it's yeah, they did just kind of disband.
Yeah, and then the rest of the film is basically about Jake Gyllenhaal going like, oh, I don't want anybody to push me. And then he goes to the bus stop and sees the burnt down bookstore. And then he's like, well, somebody pushed me. And then he goes.
he's so angry and violent that he tries to be so extremely zen all the time, even if he has to walk away from a fight, just because he doesn't know what he will do if they make him angry, because he wouldn't like him when he's angry.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the one guy, I don't know what the guy's name was, but it, like assistant thug, he is unfortunately at the house, so to speak. I did like that they had like a half filled pool. It seemed very bad drug henchman kind of like place.
Very, but my dad is in prison.
Yeah,
but I want to be rich still.
So that guy has a little swagger. Then he gets punched in the hyoid or whatever bone, and then so he can't breathe or speak.
He collapses his airway and falls into a half-filled pool and drowns.
Yeah, and then I was just like, huh, that got kind of dark for him not wanting to kill anyone. Yeah. Also, he doesn't know, strictly speaking, what happened to Charlie and Charlie's father, like. He didn't check. He didn't see if they were like alive or if they had just like tripped and fallen or like what was going on. And so when we see them at the end of the movie and they have like a couple like little like cuts with like those tiny little band-aids that like cover the cut. You know, the ones that little white ones that go across it.
Yeah, like Nelly.
Yeah, and then and she's got like part of a black eye, but only like on the corner of her eye, and it's just like, Are you kidding me? Like, he murdered that man for that?
And stole $1 million or whatever?
Yeah. Well, he didn't do that yet. First, he murders him, and then he just shoves him in a cooler full of ice. And then it's just like, where are we going with this?
That part got dark really quick. I was like, what is he doing with this? Is he the body here? And then he tries to, you know, stash it with the, make it look like the assistant to the regional sheriff killed him.
I was very confused by that whole thing, because I was just like, especially when the guy woke up and he explained it to him, and then he's like, well, you won't remember any of this because of short-term memory loss from a concussion.
That was pretty funny. He's like, I get a lot of concussions and I forget stuff too, so I bet if I give this guy a concussion, he won't remember stuff. And he's like, yeah, I woke up and I totally remembered everything, you lunatic.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny, except I just still didn't understand his plan. It was just like, but why did you shoot the guy with the deputy's firearm? Like,
to make it look like the deputy shot him.
I know, but how would anyone have believed that? Also, the guy was cold.
Well, you know, he probably would have warmed up by then. It's very warm in Florida. I don't know if
Florida,
you're familiar.
Yeah, the famous Florida warmth. I don't understand. I also don't understand why Jake Gyllenhaal got the ex-boyfriend's cop's boat, who wasn't the bad cop, who was the good cop who helped them out in the previous scene, just so that he could blow up the cop's boat.
He just really needed a boat. I don't think the cop really helped him in the previous scene. He's just like,
well, those were the cops, but those were the cops who showed up at the roadhouse to break up the fight that had happened before. The gang could like really wreck the place. But he's like, oh, the wrong cops showed up. It wasn't the sheriff's. So I guess the local cops, and they didn't really go into that at all. But we do know that the one guy, Big Dick, is the corrupt sheriff, and that he comes to the boat and says that his daughter is being held captive by, you know, Billy Magnuson's character, Ben Brandt, and says like, oh, well, you have the money, you can bring it. Like, he will only release her if you do that. And it's just like, he seems very chill about this. I bet this is not really the scenario. And then when we got to the boat and we found out, of course, that wasn't really the scenario, I wasn't surprised. But then I actually was surprised when Billy Madison's character says, oh yeah, I actually did abduct her.
Double secret probation the entire time.
Yeah. double cross. Like that was kind of funny for 2 seconds.
Just because Billy Magnuson continues to be a very bad guy.
Yeah, he's not very good at his job, evidently. We are all happy when the boat gets blown up. I don't know if we were supposed to feel anything about the guy who got caught on fire, but yeah.
They're all bad guys.
Yeah, some collateral damage. And then the lunatic guy is on a Zodiac, and then there's a fight that occurs.
It's a CG boat chase.
Yeah, it's very weird, especially when, I have to say, one of the weirdest shots in this movie is when, just from a conceptual standpoint, not just the fact that they executed it with CG or whatever, like just like writing this down and storyboarding and like pitching it to someone and saying, okay, make that happen, is when Jake Gyllenhaal jumps from the Zodiac onto the other, I don't know what you call that class of speedboat, but there's a speedboat that has like basically a little roof over the captain's chair. And so he jumps but catches it and hits himself, and then they show the whole thing of him flipping backwards onto the back seat of the boat, like which is like a bench by where the engine is, and then sort of like groggily getting back up. It happens as one shot. Like it's not you know, this is not broken down where you'd see like an action per shot. This is like one fluid thing of it all occurring at the same time. And you're just like, why'd you do that?
Because like, we can.
Yeah. It was just like, I mean, that's a little over the top.
Cinema.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. You know how I feel about like flying cameras. This movie doesn't have flying cameras, but it has a lot of stuff that flies and the camera kind of like is parented to it. And you're just like, why is the camera like nodally locked to what is going on here? This object flying through the scene.
A little too much Spider-Man in the ocean.
Yeah. Well, he did play Mysterio.
It's true.
Yeah. So.
R.I.P. Mm-hmm. Spoiler.
Mm. I mean, hopefully people are watching Jake Gyllenhaal's career in chronological order, starting with the Donnie Darkos, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, and then the movie just kind of ends.
Yeah, he gives the money to the bookstore people, and he gets on a bus and goes somewhere.
Yeah.
He leaves his lady behind, and the bar is in good shape now with a strong future, even though, I don't know, the family of the dead bad guy still owns all the land. So, you know, so much for the local citizens regaining some control over their futures.
I also, there is another further complication of, I forget who says it, but someone tells Dalton that Ben Brandt has had to borrow a lot of money to make this stuff happen. Mm. And that part of that is that's this money delivery that's coming, that Arturo Castro tells him about, and it's being delivered by helicopter, and we don't know anything about the source or obligation of that. I would have preferred, rather than snapping his neck, if we had some sort of like repercussion, because like we still leave this dangling thread of like, where did that money come from or why?
You and like, see him get killed by the mob and thrown out of a helicopter?
Sure, that would have been fun. Or just like, just because you gave a suitcase full of mob money to the bookstore people because you like them.
By the mob now?
Yeah, it's just like, did you not learn a lesson, a valuable lesson from your interaction with these people earlier in the movie? Like just giving
it's
them
like a... None of these people have seen Drive.
Yeah, so giving them a suspiciously large quantity of money in a small town, I'm sure that'll go over well. Roadhouse 2. Dead Charlie.
Three.
I mean, three.
Well, I mean, this is the second one.
No, because this is the first in a new sequence.
You can't call it Roadhouse 2. There's already two of them.
But it's the second of this Roadhouse. This one's already just called Roadhouse. This is not called Roadhouse 1.
Two Road, Two House, Knox's Revenge.
Mm-hmm.
They could turn this into a Fast and Furious series very easily.
I mean, they might. I don't know if Doug Liman will be part of it, but they could. They could. I don't know. I mean, it's not like there's anything super special or alchemical about the writing or the casting or really anything.
Is this the most unserious movie Jake Gyllenhaal's ever done?
That can't be true.
Hmm. I wonder. It's certainly not on the other end of the spectrum of the types of movies he picks.
Oh, do you remember Bubble Boy, Dan?
Bubble Boy. Okay, so this might be the second most unserious movie he's ever been in.
Hmm.
Maybe. Yeah.
Remember The Day After Tomorrow?
Yeah, that was a serious movie. It wasn't
was
very good.
Was it serious?
I mean, okay. Yeah, it was. There was no tongue in that cheek. Yeah, he's a pretty serious guy, which is, I guess, you know, part of what makes it fun to see him here.
Yeah. Well, didn't he also have that weird thing recently where he just like talked about how he doesn't use soap anymore or something strange?
I must have missed that one.
I don't know. He said something weird. I don't think I've kept track of it, so I don't want to besmirch him. But I was just like, I'm sorry, what?
I have no doubts that he's an odd man.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when you're this rich and famous for this long, you're not salt of the earth. Like,
just extremely committed and dedicated to your craft as an actor.
Yeah, he's not going to Darden restaurants. He's not really concerned about the cost of mayonnaise. Like, how much could it cost? $10? He's really
probably got a lot going on. You know, yeah. stuff happened.
Mm-hmm.
He's from a filmmaking family in Los Angeles. He was recently on the Smart List podcast, which is actually pretty good.
I've never listened to that.
I listened to very few of them. But every now and again, I listen to one. It's very, It's very what I assume to be small talk at Hollywood parties kind of vibes, where everyone's like, "Oh, hey, we all know each other. We're best buddies. Let's ask some really not hard hitting questions."
Hmm.
But it was fun. Aside from the part where they praised him for Donnie Darko, because that movie still sucks.
Yeah.
Maybe I ought to give it another try one of these days, but I do not remember liking any part of it.
Do you think Taylor Swift will write a song about Roadhouse?
This one?
Mm-hmm. Well, he's in this one. They used to, she's got like a, you know, she famously writes songs about her exes.
You think there's going to be an offhanded comment about sort of something related to Roadhouse because he's in this? I don't know. I think she's moved on. I think she's past that now.
Yeah.
I say not having listened to any of her new music.
No, she released two albums. You can't have listened to it the past week. No, nobody sane can have listened to both of those.
I mean, I did listen to a Limp Bizkit album on repeat for a couple of days for some reason.
Dan.
You want to have a bad time. Do you have any idea how long Fred Durst's Wikipedia page is? It is three times longer than it should be.
I don't. Now I'm trying to think, how long should Fred Durst's Wikipedia page be?
There should be minimal scrolling required to read it. It is so much longer than that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, at least tell me, the album, was it Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog Flavored Water?
It was.
Okay. Just checking.
At one point, I was like, maybe I should switch to a different Limp Bizkit album, and I started playing another one. I was like, nope, going back.
And I'm not saying that like it's the good one. I'm just saying like of the options, I would be concerned if
of
it was
the options. It's the good. Yeah. I thought the one before that would have been the good one, and I started listening. And was like, no, Nookie is not the good one.
No,
we're not doing that.
No, we are not doing it all for the Nookie. You can take that cookie.
No. I'm trying to.
Well, see, the problem is that you can't have that song these days because you'd have to have a banner because. You have to have the ability to opt out of cookies.
Jesus.
For your Nookie.
That's only in Europe or whatever, right?
Well, that's, yeah, the GDPR. But then here in California, we have the privacy stuff, so.
Well, I live in Arizona where we still have freedom, so.
You can take that cookie.
Yeah, I certainly could. No, I'm attempting to reevaluate some of the things from the early 2000s and see what the hell that was all about. And Limp Bizkit is certainly one of those things. And I don't have any strong conclusions yet, but it's been food for thought recently.
Speaking of that, have you revisited Korn?
A little bit. Mostly because I think I mentioned this to Austin, but not to you. The people on the TikTok,
oh no,
they're bringing back the Korn, and
no,
very much in the kind of ways where the comments are like, oh my god, what a time it must have been to be a teenager back then. I was like, no. You need to stop with those thoughts right now.
Oh,
but there was a
misguided.
There was a concert performance where they were doing Blind live, and so many people are like, oh my god, look how packed that concert is for miles around. It's like, yeah, they don't do that anymore because people got trampled to death and it's not safe. But like, you forget how freaking weird Jonathan Davis was. He's running around in Adidas and high socks and a kilt with dreadlocks and that weird half a mustache and that that mic stand that looked like one of the ships from Riddick or whatever. Like, this was a thing that was on the radio and on MTV. Like, what was happening to us back then that we were like, yeah, that's totally normal?
Yeah, I mean, I guess because we didn't have a lot of options for things, you just kind of had to take whatever came to you via Total Request Live.
There's so much about that time that, like, again, my theory about the just like it was the internet was new and we were just being exposed to new culture and everyone was mashing everything together in a very bad way. But like, we were just like coming into this like exposure to all this new stuff going like, maybe this is normal. I think no, it was not normal.
No,
that was like, I know we didn't use the phrase new metal back then, but holy crap. Some of the stuff that we were doing back then was like, it's insane. It's certifiable.
Yeah.
It's an absurd sideshow. And we were just like, yeah, that's Korn. What are you talking about? It's Korn.
but like I said, like, it wasn't really the internet. It was like this stuff just like filtered to you from Total Request Live, like, or the
really
radio.
TRL was the culture maker back then.
Well, it was a huge impact for teenagers for sure. Which yeah. We were in the group of, but also like what would be on the radio and stuff. Like, it was like, there's a, we didn't talk about it, but there's a part in this movie where they play Enter Sandman briefly. And I was just like, oh no, because I have an aversion to Metallica because the rock station in Tampa, Florida basically only ever played Metallica. And then like occasionally would play Korn or play Limp Bizkit or something just to like have the appearance of being youthful, but then like immediately slam back into Enter Sandman again. And Enter Sandman is not a short radio length song. It is miserable if you turn on the radio and it's just the start of Enter Sandman. You're just like, oh no, my whole drive is going to be Enter Sandman.
Yeah, I similarly recoil against Metallica songs, mostly because of their fans. But yeah, I just grew up not being into it. But you know, I and that's another one of those ones I've tried to reevaluate. It's like, yeah, they've got some really good songs. They are extraordinarily long, and they all start like in the middle of a sentence because James Hetfield is just a very strange writer. But they've got some good riffs to them.
Yeah, but also remember Lars.
He's doing his
infomercials about like anti-Napster stuff, and we were all just like, "But Napster is how we get our music. Like, we need it so that we can listen to the cool songs. Like, what are we supposed to do? Buy CDs?" And so we didn't love Lars at the time.
No.
He was not endearing himself to a new generation of fans. That's for sure.
No, certainly not.
Mm-hmm.
And then he killed the band with that Saint Anger album and the terrible drumming. But yeah, there's the early 2000s were so weird.
Yeah,
so weird. That's why we throw back to the 90s and the 80s with Roadhouse.
Yeah,
the people on the internet, the people of TikTok who are pulling out the new metal stuff and the early 2000s stuff and vaguely romanticizing it. You need to stop that. Very much need to stop that.
They will stop it within the next 9 months.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. I'm going to have so much free time now.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't it be it would be kind of poetic, I guess, if someone at Paramount could scrape up enough money that MTV bought it or something. It was like branded MTV's TikTok. That would be good. And then we could just like go back to like cycling through whatever music they shoved into the algorithm to make popular. That would be good for everyone. Healthy yeah, stuff.
For sure. I mean, I get more music from TikTok than pretty much anywhere else. It's basically MTV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you noticed, Dan, but that's why songs are shorter. That's why you can't have an Enter Sandman these days, because it's just too long for TikTok.
There are some bands who are like gaming the algorithm, who write like extremely catchy songs that are literally like 62 seconds long. And you go to like download it on Apple Music and you're like, what? This is the whole song? And then every one of their TikToks is like the same song with like a different live performance. And they're just trying to like get it in front of as many people as possible because they know it's catchy. And it's like, no, this is the entire length of it. And you're like, okay, great. That's bad. I don't like this at all.
In my day, it was 99 cents and it was called a ringtone. But so
ring back tones.
Oh God.
I still can't listen to Hey There Delilah because that was somebody's ring back tone and it fucking drives me crazy.
Oh no.
It's a bad song too, but like,
yeah,
it comes on. Where I heard it? I feel like I heard it on like satellite radio not too long ago. It's just like, nope, I will crash my car into a wall.
No. Yeah, I don't know. It's just some 90s stuff where you hear it and you're just like, wait, I'm just like transported to another dimension. Like, because you just have not heard it, but you know everything, every lyric, every like everything about it, you just know in every fiber of your being the second you hear it. And it's just like, but it hasn't occurred to you, you haven't thought about it in forever. So like Train's Hey Soul Sister, or I recently saw referenced in a little like a blurb by someone, and I was just like, oh no, because them mentioning it immediately made it flood back into my mind, and I was just like, how did that happen? But yeah,
less with bad than Drops Jupiter, am I right?
It's one of these comedians on the internet, and said Train's Hey Soul Sister came on at this coffee shop, and so many of us across all backgrounds subconsciously are lip singing the chorus. I feel like I'm in a Bank of America commercial or some shit. And I just have to identify with that, because I immediately just started like the whole thing just rushed into my brain the second I read Hey Soul Sister.
That's one of those songs that it just kind of makes me feel a little sick to my stomach, even though like I won't show it. But like most of these things now, like rather than being transported, I have like an out of body experience, like where like the old version of me is sitting next to me, like listening to the song, and I'm just silently judging that person, going, "What is wrong with you? What has happened to you?" But I think I'm officially a boomer now, because for the first time in like a year, I actually did a post on Instagram, and I didn't notice that they automatically turn on the post to Facebook button, so I posted it to Facebook too. So I'm now that guy who's like typing directions to the doctor into my Facebook status update or whatever, and everyone's like, "Grandma, this is not Google."
I noticed that they have that enabled. Every time I go to post anything, it's just like, "Don't you want to share this to Facebook?" And it's like, first of all, my Facebook is deactivated. Second of all, no, as a matter of fact, I don't.
I got distracted where it's like audience, friends, and I was like, I don't know what that is, and I'm not going to look any further below this. And there's a big toggle button that says automatically share to Facebook, and I was like, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
My cousin liked something that I posted, the person that I haven't seen in years. They're just like, oh, Dan posted something on Facebook for the first time in many, many years. And it's this dumb thing related to a video that nobody has any context for, because Facebook is terrible.
Well, you know why? Is because Facebook specifically notified them, because you haven't posted. It says, Dan posted for the first time in a long time here. But if you were someone who posted all the time, it would notify them, because that's how that algorithm works. Yeah, it's about driving engagement.
Like, God love him, but like the first comment on this post that should not even have been there is Amanda's 91-year-old grandpa going, "Dan, when's your birthday?"
It's just like, oh my gosh.
Jesus Christ. Like, please don't.
And then Thank you for your interest, sir.
Mom's cousin's like, "Oh, he's so handsome." I'm like, "Jesus, please. Facebook, you need to die."
And then did you go in and unpost it?
No, Amanda's like, "You can't go delete it now." Everyone'd be like, "Why did you delete that post? It's really awkward and weird." Oh no. My mom's cousin wrote "the coolest" with the sunglasses emoji.
See, what you gotta do is wait.
Is kill myself?
No, you just wait a month for it to cool off. You know, people will forget. And then you swoop in and you deactivate your Facebook account.
I gotta leave it there, just like because it's the only place I get family news. Because like, whatever, it's a whole thing. But
I have an amazing thought technology.
No,
what if you didn't get family news?
Well, then I'd have more of these conversations about like, you know, I see my mom, you know, every couple of weeks, but then like on the third time I see her, she's like, so did you hear that so-and-so died? I'm like, no, I didn't hear that so-and-so died. Why wouldn't you tell me that? And all these different times I've seen you, like, oh, I thought you knew. I thought somebody told you. Like, no, nobody told me.
No.
You're my mother. You're supposed to tell me these things.
But see, that's the thing. It's like, if it mattered, then someone would have told you.
It's funny. The things that matter to me are not the things that come to me. All of the things that don't matter to me is the information I get. But that's just the internet. Slash family.
Yep.
I wish I could go unwind and have a shot or two at the old roadhouse. Mm-hmm. Let loose a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a place that's so hot and humid with no doors or windows makes total sense.
Yeah, I mean, if I was in South Florida, which is way hotter than Central Florida, I would definitely sit somewhere that had no air conditioning.
In pants and boots.
And frequent fights, that's for sure.
Everyone's just got their brains are melting, and that's why they're fighting.
Yeah. Oh, we didn't even talk about the Cuban coffee.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Jesus. Yeah, they're trying to reference the first one with coffee black, and they're like, we don't do that. We do things a little differently around here.
Yeah.
This movie takes place in Florida, so have a Cuban coffee.
Yeah. And it's just like, okay. They make no effort to explain it. They're just like, oh, it's different. It's just like, okay. good job.
Sugar.
Everyone.
Sugar is the thing.
Yeah, it's just like, what if you just had really strong coffee that had sugar in it? Just tons of sugar.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it's a thought technology. It really converted somebody who wanted a black coffee into someone who wants an incredibly sweet, but still tastes like cigarette ash coffee. So yeah, that's good.
I've had espresso like that.
Yeah, it's called Starbucks. But yeah, I think we've roaded this house.
Yeah, I'm glad they made another Roadhouse, because Roadhouse are kind of fun movies, but. I'd probably just go watch the other one again.
But see, the good thing about them, and I have this conversation, at least in my head. I don't always say this because people don't always want to hear this. So I'll just say it briefly right now, is when someone remakes a movie, I don't get upset about it because it doesn't delete the previous movie. It is just
ruining
a reminder.
My childhood, Joe.
Yeah, it is just a reminder to go check out the thing you liked. And oftentimes, people will talk about the old thing more because the new thing is there. And if you don't have the new thing, then people talk about the old thing less. So if you want people to forget about something, then never remake it. So anyway, that's my very brief thesis, in which I say, which I appeal to logic and encourage people to not get all like bent out of shape whenever they remake something and say like, oh, you know, this Roadhouse remake doesn't live up to the original or something like absurd, where it's just like, it's just different. And if you like the previous one, this makes you want to go watch it. So you should be happy about that at least. And you real tell about whether or not something was a good remake, or prequel or something, is if you type in that movie's name into the Google search bar and it pre-populates with the original one and not the new one. Then you know the cultural impact that the original still has.
Well, either that or the SEO team with the new one isn't really doing their job very well.
No, well, remember when The Thing came out, the new one in 2013? And yeah, it was like a prequel, quasi not sequel thing. It was very like half butted.
Wasn't that Mary Elizabeth Winstead and somebody else?
Sure.
I don't remember, actually.
But that, I didn't see it, but that was so unpopular and so panned and so critically derided, but it never displaced the original at all, just because it existed. And people get so upset about that kind of stuff. And I don't think that they ought to be. You can comment on whether or not the movie is like a shameless money grab or something, but I don't think this Roadhouse, despite the accusations of the writer of it having like AI stuff so that they could beat their deadline to release the movie or whatever. Like, I don't feel like this is shameless. I feel like it has the appropriate amount of shame. Like, it knows what it is. And so I'm completely content with that. And any fans of the original can watch the polar bear, and get their fix. You know, whatever.
Amen.
Mm-hmm.
Mic drop.
Yeah. And also with you.
And also with your soul.
Hey, soul sister.
And also with your hey, soul sister. Oh, God.